Hamid Hayat was born in California and raised in the town of Lodi. It's a community with a large Pakistani population. In 2003, Hayat traveled to Pakistan, where his parents are from, and that trip caught the attention of American counterterrorism authorities. Hayat wound up getting tried and convicted of aiding jihadists. Well, Hayat's case is complicated. It involves post-9/11 terror charges, questions about the credibility of an informant, and access to classified evidence against him. To this day, Hayat, from prison, says he's innocent. But the piece that our friends at the Marshall Project are looking at in this week's Case in Point hinges on video testimony in the courtroom and, in Hamid's case, video alibi testimony from foreign nationals on foreign soil. Abby Van Sickle is staff writer at the Marshall Project and author of this week's Case in Point, and she explains Hamid Hayat's case.
Hamid Hayat is, he's from Lodi, California. He's an American citizen. And back in 2005, the FBI accused him of material support to terrorism for going to a jihadi training camp in Pakistan. A jury convicted him. A judge sentenced him to 24 years in federal prison, and that's where he is right now.
Why did Hayat say he was in Pakistan? Because he says the government has it all wrong.
So Hamid Hayat, his family has deep roots in Pakistan, and for most of his childhood, he sort of lived in both worlds. He's gone back and forth between a rural village in Pakistan and California, and he says that in 2003, he went back to Pakistan in order to find a bride, to find a local woman to marry, and that he did do that, that he married in his home village and remained there for 2 years until May 2005, when he headed back to California with his family.
Hayat has an appeal before a federal judge now, and he says, his lawyers say, that there were all kinds of problems, all kinds of shortcomings that led up to his conviction. Talk about some of those. And most importantly, let's start with access to classified evidence, because we've heard this theme time and time again in terrorism cases, people being tried based on evidence that's secret.
Yes. So in his case, at the trial, his trial lawyer, it was her first criminal case, she did not seek a security clearance. So that meant that the government's, any evidence they had that was classified, she was not able to see it or to participate in hearings about it. And so the prosecutors and the judge, you know, they could look at that evidence and talk about it, but she couldn't participate. And so in his appeal, that's a really big point that Hamid is making, is that he was never able to fully participate to understand and see the evidence that the government was using against him.
So, Abby, here's where it gets interesting and a little bit problematic. A lot of the corroboration for his side of the story, essentially an alibi, it's not here in the United States where he's being held. It's overseas. It's in Pakistan, right?
That's right. So it's not in dispute that Hamid went to Pakistan. Hamid says he did. The government says he did. It's a question of what he did when he was there. And Hamid says that he was in this little rural village called Babudi, and that people in the village would know if he had left for several months to go to any kind of terrorist training camp. So he says he has an alibi and all these people willing to explain where he was and what he was doing while he was there.
So why can't they just explain it?
So they did actually end up explaining it during this really fascinating hearing a few weeks ago. So the witnesses are, you know, all in this rural village. They couldn't get visas to come to the United States. His defense lawyers had proposed that the defense and the prosecutors all travel to Pakistan and interview them, take their testimony. But the prosecutors objected to that. And so the judge allowed video conference testimony to, you know, essentially setting up a screen in the courtroom, keeping the court open from 5:30 to 10 o'clock at night so that these witnesses could testify in the daytime in Pakistan. And so we all watched, you know, you could see their faces and hear their voices as they talked about what Hamid was doing in their home village for those 2 years.
What did these people in rural Pakistan say during their testimony about Hayat's time there?
So they told pretty consistent stories, essentially that Hamid stayed in the village, that he left very rarely and only for a couple of days at a time. he was there with his mother, and his mother has some health issues, and he would go with her to a nearby city for her health appointments to see a doctor. And once he went to a friend's wedding with some other friends for a few days, but that other than that, that he never left for any significant amount of time. All of them were very clear that they didn't think he was the sort of person who would be capable of traveling alone. A couple of years before, he had suffered from meningitis, and they testified that, you know, he was not very strong and would be very timid about traveling on any kind of public transport or going anywhere by himself. They said that he mainly stayed in the village, that he played cricket, that he hung out with his friend at the local tailoring shop, and that he led a very sort of simple, quiet life.
So it's a remarkable proceeding, but it's a little bit complicated because when people testify in court, I mean, video testimony certainly isn't unheard of, but these are people on foreign soil. Can they be made, for instance, to swear an oath to tell the truth? Does that stick if you're testifying from a village in rural Pakistan?
That's one of the things that everyone had discussed in court is, what do you do about an oath? In the United States, there are a couple of things that we do in order to try to ensure that witnesses are telling the truth. One is that the proceedings are held in a courtroom or an official building, with the idea that if you're in a formal setting, you will realize, you know, the importance of telling the truth. And the other is to swear an oath, to swear that you're going to tell the truth. And so what do you do if you're testifying in a country where, you know, if these witnesses lied in Pakistan, if they swore an oath for an American court and they committed perjury, it's highly unlikely they would be brought to the U.S. to be, you know, to face perjury charges. And so that's a question that the judge had asked the lawyers and that I'm imagining they're going to be debating when they file their briefings, you know, in the next couple months.
Has this kind of thing happened before with overseas testimony? Is there any precedent?
There's definitely been overseas testimony of witnesses for the prosecution. In those sorts of cases, as the prosecutor talked about in Hamid's case, the prosecutors have a lot of support, typically in finding courts where they can take the testimony and support from local prosecutors and local judges. This is a much more rare situation. I can't say that it's never happened before, but I've been looking to try to find, you know, other cases where this sort of thing has happened, and I haven't been able to find other cases. The defense lawyer in this case called it unprecedented.
So his appeal is in front of the judge now. What's next for Hamid Hayat?
So his lawyers have been trying to get his conviction overturned. The defense lawyers and the prosecutors now have a couple of months to brief what happened in the evidentiary hearing. And then the judge is going to make a determination after looking at the evidence.
Abby Van Sickle, staff writer for the Marshall Project and author of this week's Case in Point. Abby, great to have you.
Thank you so much.